Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's a scary time of year, Halloween and all.
So it's a good time to talk about this.
Up in St. Joe. It's the Glor Psychiatric Museum. I wandered into this thing a couple years ago. I read about it online, and I was like on the Atlas Obscura website. And I went up and was just blown away by how cool it was.
Yeah, because then you told me about it, and we made it up early this summer. Like, it is fantastic.
It's just a look into the world of insanity. And I know that there's many PC ways we're supposed to talk about it, but this is the old school. This is not the way we handle it now. There's much better doctors now, more understanding now. But, you know, I was telling you about, in 1913, the Kansas legislature, it was an act. This is it. The Eugenics Act. So to prevent the procreation of habitual criminals, idiots, epileptics, imbeciles, and the insane. That was the wordage. That's the verbiage of it all. Criminals, idiots, epileptics, imbiciles, and the insane. How about the poor epileptics that got stuck in there because they have a seizure once in a while? Right. Like,
how'd I get roped into this?
I mean, that's
those?
A pretty broad, like criminal, that's a long way from criminal to epileptic.
So
I have a medical condition.
Hey, you, petite mole, get over there. You know.
We're taking
your balls off. In fact, and I love this, the overall, are you an imbecile or an idiot? There actually was a position called the director of the feeble-minded.
Oh,
I feel like I'm the director of the feeble-minded. So you can go up and spend the night in the Glor Psychiatric Museum. And I think, to me, that is frightening. They do the paranormal stuff. And look, I don't believe in ghosts. But if there are ghosts, I'd say the tormented souls of people who are treated so badly in these hospitals. You know, it's, again, not today. But it's important, these sites like this, because you don't want to forget that kind of wackiness.
No.
You know, but it's a side note, but when I look at the old psychiatric stuff or the quackery, like the violet ray stuff where they'd shock your skin.
Yeah.
And I see, like, people vaping. I'm like, yep. Like, yep.
Yeah.
So this is how we quit smoking in the 2000s. I'm like, yeah. Turns out it gives you a giant brain tumor. Yeah. That's that. It'll be remembered that way.
Oh, yeah.
So let me get Sarah on here.
Our next guest is the curator of collections for one of the more interesting museums our area has to offer, the Glor Psychiatric Museum in St. Joseph, Missouri. Covering the 130-year history of the state mental hospital, illustrating the history of mental health treatment through the years, and on October 6th, you can spend the night at what has been called one of the 50 most unusual museums in the United States. Please welcome, from the Glor Psychiatric Museum, Sarah Elder.
Hey Sarah, how are you?
I'm good, Johnny. How are you? T and Nikki doing today?
Good. Good to hear your voice again. I'm so weirded out by this stuff, and it takes a lot to creep me out. And I kind of look for it. And when I was there the first time, it does. It's frightening. The idea of insanity. The idea of not knowing if this is reality, but you believe it's reality. And the way they would treat people like that. That's genuinely frightening stuff.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, what was trying to do, or what doctors and nurses and these were trying to do, were really, they were treating symptoms in the 19th century. It wasn't so much getting to the cause. It was just treating the symptoms. So the tranquilizer chair, the hollow wheel, all that stuff, it was their idea of treating the symptom. Not to say that there weren't doctors, there were. Or doctors early on were trying to get to the root cause, but still just treating these symptoms, which to our 21st century eyes, are very much torturous.
Well, think about it. I mean, look, these were places that were underfunded in a segment of society. Well, I was just reading that the group of human beings when in 1913 they passed that eugenic style act of the prevent the procreation, and criminals, idiots, epileptics, imbeciles, and the insane. Basically, if we found you unpleasant, we don't want there to be more of you. Like, it's ridiculous. But we did the same thing with people who were insane, and so they got no love, no mercy. There was no funding. And I think a lot of the staffs that were in those places most likely didn't have any business being there.
Because there was no training. Psychiatry, right, as a field of medicine, it, quite frankly, is fairly recent and fairly recently accepted. So back then, it was just treating, like I said, medical doctors are very limited training, let's face it, the training for medicine always only seems to go by leaps and bounds after a war. They learn things based on the wounds that happened during a war. And it just taken this long for medical science to catch up.
And so these things like the lunatic box or the patient treadmill, which is a big habit, you know, hamster trail, where hamster wheel, mm-hmm, and it's just a closed in one. They just run them until they were exhausted, and then of course they're going to calm down. Or, you know, you basically the idea of most of these things was either to shock them, and they thought they would, you know, physically shock them, not necessarily with electricity, but like dump them in an ice cold bath, or yeah, scare them in some way, or shock them in some way that would shock them out of their current state, their zone. And obviously, yeah, none of this is going to work.
No, but again, it's just like, okay, we know that ice cold water has a physical shock to the system. We know that. So maybe the same is true for the mental system. We can shock them with the dousing tub with icy cold water poured over them, or the bath of surprise where they are basically sitting on a trap door and the trap door opens unexpectedly and they plunge into a bath of icy cold water. It's that kind of trying to that cause of effect, which, sorry, it doesn't work. And we know now it doesn't work, but they didn't know that at the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's akin to the idea back, you saw those movies where the woman would get hysterical and her husband would give her a hot one, and she's, oh, thank you, okay, I can think again. You're like, no, I don't think that's how we're supposed to handle it.
No, exactly. Yeah. But again, it's just, it all goes back to, I don't, wrong thinking or not, or just illogical thinking at
what
the time.
What, like, about?
Oh, well, if this, then this.
Why do you think the, and maybe the shocking part also went, because there was a lot of anal dilators. I remember that part too.
The rectal dilators, yeah, they do actually have a valid medical purpose. They could be used in the treatment of constipation, of piles, of dysentery. They're just not used necessarily in that manner today.
Okay. I was just thinking, that's shocking. Pop that in.
Well, what's even slightly more shocking is there are people that, well, maybe it's not shocking, but there are people who collect those items.
Oh, well, I was just talking earlier about the violet ray stuff that came out of Chicago, which was not necessarily used for anything psychiatrically, but it's quackery. And I think if you guys ever do another collection up there or a limited time, it would be fantastic to get one of those. Like, I've got one of those boxes with all the different glass tubes that are filled with gas, and they'd run electricity through them, and one was for your hair, and one was, you know, literally every hole in your body got one.
I shouldn't laugh. Because they thought it was a valid treatment at the time. Of course, now it's like, yeah, no, thank you. Moving on. I will try something else. So, yes, I will definitely keep that in mind.
Because I think that stuff is fascinating. The things that we thought were a good idea or would, you know, give us some relief or change anything. But we thought, you know, it's all rooted in so many different things. If there's a little bit of pain, then it must be doing something good. If it was modern and you couldn't understand it with your, you know, level of where the world was, then it must be built by a smarter person who knows better than I do. And that was the game,
exactly,
right? And that's how you'd sell this stuff.
Yeah, that's how a lot of there's a great fairly new book out. It talks about quackery, and it's all the both for the medical side and for the psychiatric side of the different things that doctors tried to sell, the tonics that were sold that were just basically pure alcohol,
yeah,
that could cure everything from hair loss to cancer, all in this one magic bottle.
Oh.
And yeah, people would buy these looking for that cure. And that was George Glore, the founder of the Glore Psychiatric Museum, was his mission was to help destigmatize mental illness. Because as you said, basically if somebody didn't think or act or operate in a way that society considered to be normal, they would be sent to,
yeah,
these huge institutions, which were outside of town, they were outside city limits, that was standard, and just left there, and because that stigma was so great to have someone in your family with a mental illness, nobody,
right,
wanted to know.
Well,
so, as you mentioned, the records of over in Kansas, people were just simply forgotten, or just not talked about ever again, or talked about in hushed whispers. We get that a lot. You know, like, I just found out that my great-great-grandfather was, you know, was a patient out here, and what can you tell me? And we get that a lot from visitors or from people just searching out their family histories.
Yeah.
And that's part of the thing with the Glore Psychiatric Museum is to, this is what was done, and look how far we've come, right, and how far we have yet to go.
And that is the scary thing. I mean, Glore, in its own way, was so much. If you wanted to go somewhere, you wanted to go to Lunatic Asylum Number 2 as opposed to Kansas, like the Topeka State Hospital. That thing, that's what scares me. The idea that you've committed no crime, you are simply right. you're ill, and they yes. lock you away. You couldn't escape. Nobody was going to save you. And it wasn't uncommon for a husband, like if they didn't want to get, they couldn't get divorced because of the church and their standing of the community, they'd go, well, we're going to go in and talk to this person, and then bam, they'd have somebody committed, and you might not ever get out.
No, that's true. You may not ever get out. And it was for a variety of reasons, not just someone who would be diagnosed with a mental illness. Alcoholics could be taken, drug addicts. In the case of the state hospital in St. Joseph, it was also the tuberculosis hospital.
Yeah, you had TB.
So, yeah, now... Yeah, so it became an isolation place it wasn't until the 1960s that the superintendent was like, you know, hey, let's stop and think about this. We should be treating the mentally ill. So, you know, by this time, there was penicillin for syphilis, which can lead to mental illness. It causes lesions on the brain.
Tertiary stage.
So, you know, antibiotics can help with that. Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, all of this was available by the 1960s, so he started downsizing to truly treating the mentally ill. And that wasn't until about 50, 55 years ago.
It is fascinating and truly, like, again, I always look for scary stuff, and this is one of those things I go, oh man, there's a lot going on here. You look at, like, the lobotomies, you know, where they would mm-hmm. just stick that little ice pick basically in the corner of your eyes, like the thin spot, and they didn't know where they were really getting, you know, how much damage they were doing. It was a guesstimate, you know, exactly. Like, all right, just wiggle it until they stop yelling. And then you'd pull it out, and then they'd destroy that tissue. And in an adult, you would be a zombie. You'd just be lobotomized.
Yeah, and that was the ice pick lobotomy, or as it's officially known as the transorbital lobotomy, was the brainchild or the invention of Dr. Walter Freeman. Before then, they were performing neurosurgery, literally going into the skull and disconnecting the frontal lobe from the rest of the brain. But it was too time consuming and very expensive. So Dr. Freeman's like, oh, no, here, I can do this better, faster, and you should do it to everybody.
And here,
you know, don't try anything else. Just do it, because it's going to cure everybody. And the thing was, is that there was enough behavioral differences in some patients that it continued. And it just, I think it's estimated, I think the figures that we have in the exhibit are in the United States in the 1930s and 1940s, over 40,000 people were lobotomized nationwide.
Well, here's this, you guys want to really understand how they treated people who they believed were, you know, they were just, you were uncomfortable because they were different, right? Nobody wanted that. Everybody, the facade of our family in America at the time and all that. But the Kennedys, so Rosemary Kennedy. Think about this. Mm-hmm. She most likely was, and she's one of Joe's kids, Joe Kennedy, a huge politician, ambassador to Germany, the whole thing in the World War. So he, and a rotten bastard, this is how big of a rotten bastard this guy was. She was a political liability. Most likely she was maybe a little mentally handicapped, and she had fits of rage, and she would act out, but because that could reflect poorly on this family that's going for all this political power, he quietly, with behind everybody's back, schedules her for a lobotomy and completely gets her egg scrambled.
Yeah. She actually had brain damage from oxygen deprivation at birth, and that's what caused her issues. But, yeah, she was carefully monitored at all times. But, yeah, he had her lobotomized unbeknownst to anybody else in the family, and she was put into pretty much a permanent semi-vegetative state and was in and out of institutions for the rest of her life.
Yeah. He did that on purpose to his own kid because it was an embarrassment to the family. That's how we treated people who had mental issue. And again, she wasn't insane. She had oxygen deprivation, which gave her a learning disability, which gave her some damage, and she acted out.
Yeah, but the story is that Rose Kennedy, Rosemary's mother, mm-hmm. and like you said, Joe ruled everything. The man, he was tough as nails, and that was it. You did what Joe said. I guess Rose Kennedy just lost it with him, and told him under no uncertain terms, how bad it happened. And from what I understand, and I'd need to reread the book about Rosemary Kennedy, is that as Joe was dying, he supposedly said to Rose, "This is your revenge for what he did to Rosemary." And her sister, she developed the Special Olympics,
right?
Partly in because of what happened to her, to Rosemary.
Yeah,
was the sister who developed Special Olympics. So
this was behind the curtain of everything at the time. You know, in the '50s, yes, and the '40s, and especially in the '50s, everybody, that family. You know, the times of Camelot. We talk about the idyllic world that we were living in, but there was always, mm-hmm, you know, there's always going to be sick people. Always going to be people who need help, and it's hard to understand or hard to watch. It makes you uncomfortable to see. So we just pack them on off to these institutions.
Exactly. And, you know, there's a quote, and I may be paraphrasing. It's from Dr. Thomas Kirkbride, who was a psychiatrist who developed what are called Kirkbride buildings. And there's a whole website dedicated to the architecture of these institutions that were for the mentally ill. And I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, "Everyone with a brain is as liable to mental illness as is everyone with a pair of lungs is liable to pneumonia."
Sure.
So it can happen. It can happen to anyone. I think that's everybody's biggest fear.
Yeah, it really is.
That it can happen to me.
Because you don't know anymore. Like, I can see if my arm is broken. I know if I'm going to be in a car wreck, as it's happening. I know if a guy's coming at me and he wants to harm me, I can deal with it. At least I can understand it. Mm-hmm. But the unknown, like, sure, I don't know that I'm completely insane. And I think my reality is the right reality and everybody else has gone crazy. Yeah. And that's exactly a terrifying idea.
It is. It's terrifying to just about to everybody. And so we look for things to offset that. And that's why I think we get so many phone calls from people who have found out that they've had an ancestor and they want to know more about them and what was their diagnosis. So is it something hereditary? Is it something that they need to keep track of? And at the Glore Psychiatric Museum, we don't have access to those records because of Missouri privacy laws. But we do have a document that we can give to people. It's like, here's how you can go about getting access to this record. And you do have to go through the court system. But the state does have those records. And, you know, once you go through the system, and it is red tape and fees and stuff like that involved, you can get out and you can find out what happened to your ancestor. Now, I don't know. I've never seen the records. Some of them are fascinating. They're handwritten in these large ledgers. That's all I've ever seen.
I'd love to see the descriptions of that stuff. The descriptions must be incredible. I want to make sure we also hit this. October 6th, how many people are going to be allowed to spend the night at the Glore Psychiatric Museum in the tunnels? They'll see the whole thing. It's all night. There'll be paranormal investigation. How can people get in that, and what will happen that night?
Well, here's what's going to happen. Starting October 6th, and we're limiting it to 30 people, and we do still have space available, but be sure to call and get your reservations in. It's October 6th, starting at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and it includes a documentary called Killer Cure. It's a fascinating look at the history of mental illness. It does include footage of an actual ice-pick lobotomy, so you can look forward to that. We do have a tour of the Glore Psychiatric Museum during daylight with the lights on. Dinner's included, snacks, plenty of coffee. Bring your sleeping bags, your air mattresses, whatever. You can sleep pretty much anywhere in the museum. We do have a couple of restrictions, and that's just for the safety of the exhibits. And the next morning, we'll have a continental breakfast. We do have a paranormal investigation by Apex Paranormal. They're in the Kansas City area. They are a great group of people. And they will not only, you know, let you use their equipment if you haven't brought any of your own, they'll take you through and they will help you and instruct. And you can watch. You can be at the nerve center, as they call it, and watch what happens on the monitors, or go and have silent time and try to interact with whatever spirits may still be lingering around.
Well, if there are such a thing as spirits or ghosts, you know, the torment in those institutions would be the place that I think.
Exactly.
And, you know, you don't know, like, what happened to the lady. You see those paintings the schizophrenics would do, the art. And, I mean, that was some lonely, lonely looking stuff. And it's not like you have to guess at what the story is behind the painting when you see it. Like, it's just a lonely, I mean, the subject matter, everything that's going on, the notes inside, was it 500 notes stuffed inside the television?
Yes, over 500 notes and letters were stuffed inside a television set, yeah.
So what was happening? What did they figure out happened with that?
Well, apparently, in his mind, communication came through the TV, television shows, news, commercials. So he was just trying to send communication through the TV. So as I tell people they come through on a tour, it's like he was just about 60 years ahead of his time for email. That's what he was trying to do, was just send these messages out.
It is. And then there was one patient who just would quietly imbibe and ingest anything. And they finally had to do a surgery on the stomach, correct?
Well, actually, you know what? We have some new information on that, thanks to research done by the state. We still don't know who the patient was, but apparently she died in her sleep. And so they took her to autopsy, and that's when they found over 1,400 items in her stomach that she had swallowed.
Buttons, safety pins, needles.
Safety pins, yeah. Needles, nuts, bolts, the handles of forks and spoons, yes. And she was suffering from a disease called pica, and it was arranged in kind of a pattern, a mandala pattern, it's been referred to as. It was arranged, and it's been around the museum for, around the hospital and around the museum for over 100 years, because all that happened in 1910.
And that pica disorder is, it's an obsessive compulsive disorder that, like a coping mechanism, and it makes them like, it could be anything from clay, but it's all non-food items.
Yes, it's not. It's going to be clay. There could be metal. I mean, there was a whole television series based on that, My Strange Addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Laundry detergent, chalk, dirt, basically a hair.
Tide Pods.
Non-food, pens, just non-food items that they would just simply ingest. And it is now considered to be a form of obsessive compulsive behavior.
You and this display they have of the lady we were talking about who had the autopsy and they found the 1,400 objects. Mm-hmm. That's such a famous case of pica. If you Google pica, P-I-C-A disorder, the picture that comes up is always the Glor psychiatric one.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the number one most remembered, most talked about exhibit at the Glor Psychiatric Museum.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if somebody was there 2 days ago or 30 years ago. They remember the stomach contents of this place.
It is a fascinating place, and I always like talking to you. I'm definitely going to come by. I don't know if I'll make it for October 6th, but you know what? I'm not saying I'm not, and I will come by. I want to walk through again.
Oh, yes, please. Everybody, all of you guys, please come up and see us. Regularly, we're open Monday through Saturday, 10 to 5, Sundays, 1 to 5. Admission is only $6 a piece. The spend the night is $125 a person, but it gets you all night. Sleep pretty much anywhere in the museum you want. Talk to the spirits. Come as a skeptic.
Sure.
Maybe change your mind. Never not change your mind. And what happens, happens. We don't jump out and scare people. That's not our goal. We just want people to come. Ooh. Learn about the psychiatric museum. Learn about the treatment of the mentally ill. And we've got three other museums there in the same place, so learn about them and just come up and see us. And not everybody gets a chance to spend a night at a museum, so especially a psychiatric one.
You know what?
Come on up and see us.
I will. You know what I've got? I've got a thermal imager. And people talk about having like a cold spot or a warm spot. Like this thing's, it's a good FLIR thermal imager. And I mean, and in that situation, it'll show you if there's any temperature variation at all. I mean, it will pick it up.
Yeah, we've had some paranormal investigators come and use those, and it's very fascinating what they find.
Listen, always good to hear your voice, Sarah. I love that you love your job and know so much about it.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It is a fantastic job, and it's a great thing. And thank you so much for your interest in the Glor. I love coming on the show and talking to you guys and talking to your listeners. So October 6th, spend the night at the museum, $125 a person. Just call the museum on our website, 816-232-8471, stjosephmuseum.org.
Awesome. Stay there. Hold on, Sarah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.